All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 62 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. This is a test week. It's a short week, so we're starting on a Tuesday. And so what we're going to do is, today we're going to review the content of this segment of the course, which is called Classical and Hellenistic. That last word we haven't spent a lot of time on, so I think today is a great opportunity to kind of make sure we get that one. And so we're going to review the content of the course. Then you have two more days to work on your test preparation sheets. Since yesterday was President's Day or Washington's birthday, you may not have done any work. But if you had a chance to, here were the materials that were provided yesterday. And if you were able to get a head start on that, great. Otherwise, you have the next 2 days, which should be enough for you, I hope, and at least you can get as much done as you can. And then, so tomorrow we have history through art, which is unusual. We don't usually have it on Wednesday, but that's a test week scenario. And then we have the test prep on Thursday, when we're going to review your answers. All right, so what we are talking about starts in week 19. So we're going to look at the lower elementary class notes and give you a chance here to check your understanding of what it is that we have done over the past few weeks. And of course, the test prep sheets are designed to do that as well. And we do this, and all of this work we do because of what the classical Greeks taught us. So man, are we really here this week paying tribute to the Greeks? Because not only did they teach us to study history, and not only did they create philosophy, but specifically the philosopher Socrates taught us this rule that we are following today, which is that we need to check what we think we know and look at it closely and try to make sure that we aren't fooling ourselves. Because as the Greeks understood, as they were studying philosophy for the first time, that we don't have any kind of automatic or even easy knowledge of anything that's important. We have to work at it. And so we have to develop that love of wisdom, and we have to be willing to work hard to know. And here we are. I mean, history at our house is really a great example of that. All of your studies and all of your homeschooling is a great example of this lesson that the Greeks taught us. You will spend an amazing amount of effort over your life, and even right now as kids, you are doing it. And Patrick every day is spending time working on things like cursive writing. He's working on grammar, all the little rules that dictate how we use language. He's working on spelling. He's reading stories, what we call literature, right? He's taking history classes. He's doing multiplication tables. He's doing all the kinds of work that are required, what? To train the mind. To turn you into a person who can think so that you can succeed in life. Thank you, ancient Greece, for teaching us that. Because, sadly, if they hadn't taught it to us, I don't know if anybody would have figured it out. Because I don't see too many people in history. I've been studying history my whole adult life, and I haven't seen too many people that are anywhere near as smart as the Greeks were. And there's a lot of archaic people in the world, and there still are, sadly. But there aren't nearly as many of those special people that have that spark in them that says, I want to know more, and I want to live in a better way than most people kind of are willing to accept, and I want to change the world into a truly better place. And the Greeks were just like that overall, which is amazing. And so that's what we call classical. That's that special word that we have studied this year. Classical. Because here we are, still doing it. And classical means it's ancient, but we still value it. All right, so that's the great part of what we have had a chance to study lately. And then there's the not so great part. Okay, so that's kind of what we are concerned with here today, just to get an overview of that. And it begins with, well, that wonderful classical stuff was almost snuffed out even before it got started. So it begins with what I would call the most important war in history. Now, without even having read this, because I don't know if you have in the past day or in the past week, does anybody here want to take a stab just off the top of their heads saying, why is, maybe not, you might not be comfortable saying why it's the most important war in history, but how about just at least an explanation of why the Greco-Persian War is so important? How would you explain that right now, if you can? I'm going to remind you of your test prep sheets as a clue. On the test prep sheets, I suspect most of you know what this purple line is. And what the heck, I'm just here giving it away today. It's the Greco-Persian War, okay? This is your hint, without looking at the notes. Why is the Greco-Persian War so important? Who can work with this hint? We did this when we started this unit, so it's been a while, but I want to remind you of it, because I don't think this can be said enough. Why is the purple line here such a big deal? Obviously, we're going to add it now as an anchor fact, right? But why is it such a big deal? Who needs another hint? I think pretty much everybody needs one more hint. The hint is this. Where's the rest of the purple? Now who can answer the question? We got gray and purple coming together. And what do we have after? We have gray. All right, I see some people are awakening to this message here. Rosetta, get us started.
The purple and the gray are joined together.
Okay, but in what way? Yes, they are joined together. So it's crucial because in our term, Greco-Persian, we have a hyphen, and that means we've got two parts, Greek and Persian. Okay, so they go together, but there's more. The key is the gray that comes after. So, actually, let me elaborate just a little bit more here, right? We've got purple, 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 and then the purple keeps going, but then it reaches across. What's that? Why is this line not, let's say, a gray line going across to touch the purple? Why is it a purple line going across to touch the gray? This is here to see if you guys understand your Port-a-Land chart of history. See, this is me being Socrates on your behalf, because this is a little slippery for you guys. You haven't quite thought this through carefully enough. Let me help you out here. This line is green. And it produces more green. What's this one again? Anchor fact of history. What's this green line right here? Patrick?
Christopher Columbus
discovers America. Okay, good. So why is it a green line? What is green in our Portland chart?
The Renaissance?
Well, that's connected to it, but green means one part of the world, one culture. Which one? This is not... Yeah, okay. This is not supposed to be shaky, but you know what? If it is, it is. So green is European. Okay, this is Europe over here, right? And then the green line goes over to a new place. And from then on, that place is green, which is true. Because the people after Columbus who came here brought their European ways to America. But it doesn't stay green. Why? What's blue, Henry?
Because of the Declaration of Independence.
Right, because of the Founding Fathers, because of the American Revolution, this becomes something new and special, something separate. It's America now. All right, so it doesn't stay green anymore. It's blue. Okay, but the green came over here because of Christopher Columbus. All right, maybe that can help you guys with this purple line. What does it mean? Why is it not gray? First of all, purple is which one of the two in Greco-Persian? Julia?
Persian.
Persian. Okay, so that means this line is Persian. This line over here is the Greek line. Okay, so again, why does the purple line go over and touch the gray line in our Portland chart? Patrick?
Because right over there, that's where the Greco-Persian wars and all happened, and then Greece moves on from that?
Yes, okay, but that's not quite the question I asked. The question I asked was, why does the purple line stretch across from this line here to touch the gray line? You didn't quite answer my question. I tried to give you guys a hint. The green line goes over to America and touches it. That's Europeans coming to America. Okay? Now the purple line is coming over to touch the gray line. So, can you use that now? What does that mean? What is this?
Some sort of connection.
Yes, good. It's a connection, but we need... And it's got to be more specific. Julia?
Because the Persians tried to take over Greece.
There you go. It's the Persians leaving their area where they normally are, Persia, and going to a new place where there's already somebody else, the Greeks. Okay, so these horizontal lines over here are other people crossing over from where they are and making contact with people in another place. Okay, that's what these lines are. Movement from one area to another in history. See, so now we have the Persians coming over and making contact with Greece. Does that mean that Greece no longer exists? No. Okay, over here, this is one of the examples in history where one people come over to a new area and absolutely take over. Right, when Columbus came to America, and then the Spanish followed him, and then the English, and then the French, and then the Portuguese, and so on. If we look at the Americas today, they are completely, because the way that they are today is completely because of that. So there was nothing really there before historically. There were some people that were very primitive. And after that, everything is European. So over here, though, the Persians come along, and they come to Greece, but... Who won the Greco-Persian Wars? Real question. Who won the Greco-Persian Wars? I can't imagine that this is a headache question, Patrick, but I guess it is. Rosetta, who won?
The Greeks.
The Greeks. Okay, we know that from this chart. Why? How do we know from looking at this that the Greeks won the Greco-Persian Wars? just from looking at this, there's like a million answers. How do we know that the Greeks won? But there's one answer from this chart. Julia?
Because the gray keeps going?
Yeah, because the gray keeps going and it's not purple. Okay? If the Persians came across and they won, then what color would this be, Patrick?
Purple.
Okay, that's the way of the chart. The Portolan chart is like a clue that tells us information about history. It doesn't replace our knowledge of history. We've got to know who won the Greco-Persian War. But if we happen to have a little bit of a slip up there, we can sure use the chart. It will help us a little bit. Okay, it helps us to see when one thing starts, when one thing ends, and so on. All right, so the Greco-Persian War is here. All right, so back to my big question. We've been working on this today. Why is the Greco-Persian War so important? The purple touches, but the gray remains. Now who can answer the question? Why is the Greco-Persian War so important? Okay, I see that Julia's hand's up, so she's ready here, but I'm hoping we can just, before I ask you, Julia, I want to get everybody else trying this a little bit more still here. So, I think Julia's on to this. Everybody else here still needs some help. The purple goes across to the gray, but the gray remains. That's what happened. The gray leads to the green, leads to the blue. Which means the Greek leads to Europe, which leads to America. Remember what we said? If this becomes purple, is there ever any green? Is there ever any blue? Okay, so now we're getting closer. Rosetta's thinking she might be able to answer. Patrick's thinking he might be able to answer. What is the importance of the Greco-Persian War? Julia was the first, so let's see what she has to say. And the rest of you guys, see if you can come up with your own answer. Julia?
If the Persians have won, we wouldn't have gotten any classical ideas.
Okay, right. And none of history as we know it would be the same, right? Which means, because the Renaissance... Oh, actually, I wanted some other formulations of this. Rosetta, what's your way of saying it?
If the Persians had won, we probably, most likely, would have had... America probably have been what it is today.
I sort of heard that, but it was a little bit hard to make out. Try one more time, a little bit decisively, loudly, Rosetta.
If the Persians had won, we most likely wouldn't have had America as it is today.
Okay, if the Persians had won, Rosetta says most likely, so she's not totally ready to go along with Mr. Powell's statement that there's absolutely no way there would be an America today. But, okay, she's at least willing to say most likely. Yeah, I think you got to know history really, really. I think that's fair, Rosetta, because you got to totally know history to be able to say something for sure, right? So it might be fair for Mr. Powell to say it, but you might be willing, just not quite sure to say it. Okay, so... that's good. We're getting closer and closer. Let me bring up this point, which is connected to what Julia said. No classical ideas, no dot, dot, dot. In history. No classical ideas, no dot, dot, dot. What would be your answer to that? What would you fill in that gap there, Henry? Go ahead, Henry.
No knowledge.
Yeah, that's true enough. Okay, but what I mean is in history, what happened in history that involved classical ideas? What changed in history that was so important that involved classical ideas? Julia, go ahead.
The Renaissance.
Yes, no Renaissance. Because, okay, Julia got us started here. Renaissance means what, everybody? Patrick, what does Renaissance mean? Go ahead.
Rebirth.
Rebirth, okay. In order to have a rebirth, what do you have to have first?
Something to make reborn?
Yeah, exactly. You gotta have the thing that was born in the first place. Okay, so that's really crucial. Where is the birth? Where is the birth that later on is reborn? Remember in the School of Athens, we have these philosophers. Socrates, Aristotle, Plato. Okay, they're in Athens. Guess, they're in Athens after the Greco-Persian War. So, what happens if there is no Athens after the Greco-Persian War? What happens if it's been sacked by Persia? We saw it was destroyed by the Persians, and then they rebuilt it. Well, what if it was destroyed by the Persians and never rebuilt? So what never happens? The birth part. So if there's no birth, then there's no what else? Patrick?
Then there's no discovery of America because Christopher Columbus was in the Renaissance.
Okay, right, which is a part of if there's no birth, then there's no rebirth. Right? Maybe, way down the line, somebody else gets things rolling for the first time. But unfortunately, that's what it would be. It would be for the first time, because it never would have happened in Greece. My gosh. Okay, so that was kind of a long review of a really crucial idea. The details are all in the class notes. But, really, you know, the details only matter if we understand why, right? So this discussion has been good because you're all now thinking more in terms of why is this important? The Greco-Persian Wars, we got things like the Battle of Thermopylae, and we have a runner named Pheidippides, and we have all kinds of things going on, right? All kinds of details and so on. Details are just details. We have to know why they matter. And they matter because if the Persians had beaten the Greeks, I'm sorry to say, the world as we know it would simply not exist. It never happens. That's a really huge idea. Just unbelievable to think of it. And fortunately, there's no such thing as time travel or any kinds of changes like that. The world is what it is, so we don't have to really worry about it. It just is a big what if in our heads. But it happened the way that it did, and America does exist, so thank goodness for that. The Greeks won the Greco-Persian War. But we do have something called the Hellenistic Times. After the wonderful stuff, the classical stuff, we have the Hellenistic Times. This word we also should understand. So, I talked about it a little bit at first, and I talked about it only near the end as well, and so now's the time to make sure we've got this word understood, and I'm going to show you where it is in your class notes. It's at the very end. Okay, right here in the Greek world after Alexander in your class notes, which you'll probably be needing to read after we are done today. Okay, and so let's just read this together. Patrick, I would like you to read out loud and slowly and carefully point number 3 for the rest of the class, please, starting with sadly.
Sadly, the history of Greece after Alexander never had the same quality as the classical period. It was exhausted by war, and its people had lost their creative spark. Since a traditional word to describe things that are truly Greek is Hellenic.
Good job. Hellenic.
Historians have described this lesser period of decline and cruelty.
Oh, these are the toughest words in the sentence. Cultural, right? The culture of the people. And mediocrity. I wanted to show you guys this word because I knew it was such a big word. Okay. After Alexander as?
The Hellenistic period.
Okay. So, something that is really Greek is Hellenic. Something that's not as good and only a mediocre version of Greek is called what? A lesser version, a mediocre version of things that are Greek is called?
Hellenistic.
Hellenistic. Okay, this is the crucial idea. Okay? That we have this wonderful classical thing. Well, how come we don't live in a perfect world? How come the Greeks didn't take over the whole world and make everything just perfect from the start? Right? How come we had to go through a dark age and all that other terrible stuff? Well, because the Greeks went downhill too. They could not stop fighting each other, which is very sad. They exhausted themselves, and then they spent all their time under Alexander trying to conquer the Persian Empire, wasting all of their energy doing that. So historians look at the Greeks and they say, well, oh, that wonderful stuff. And the other stuff that's not as good, we can't use the same word for that. That wouldn't be fair to the great stuff. So when they say, all right, looking back at our favorite stuff, the classical stuff, we're going to use the word Hellenic. But then to remind ourselves of the stuff that is not as good, we're going to use a different word. Hellenistic. It's not quite the same as, what's that other word that we've been using kind of like two sets of words? One is classical, and classical is kind of different, importantly different from what else? What's the word that we use to describe things that are ancient and that have been rejected and nobody's interested in them anymore? What do we call that? These are good integrated words. Julia.
Archaic.
Yeah, right. Okay, so we have one important set of different ideas is classical versus archaic. Okay, well, classical Greek is Hellenic. Mediocre Greek is Hellenistic. Okay, that's the crucial thing. Because if we're looking at somebody like Alexander, if we're looking at even the Peloponnesian War, if we're looking at all of that stuff, it's not really Greek. It's a mix of Greek and archaic. That's what Hellenistic is, which is really sad. So that's what this time that we have been studying is all about, is how the Greeks gave birth to all these wonderful things, but then they lost it. They couldn't hold it together. Very sad. And well, I left off with this point here. We didn't study this, but just FYI, when the Greeks were all down and out, they were conquered by the Romans. So for the rest of the year, guess who we're going to be studying? The ones that conquered them. Because they're the ones that took over. They're the ones that did very important things. After Greece was done doing what it could do, the Romans took over. And the Roman Empire became absolutely mega important in history. And we're going to learn how in the next part of the course. Patrick, go ahead.
I have a question.
Okay.
Did anybody ever conquer Rome?
Yes. Who can answer that for Patrick? Did anybody ever conquer Rome? Gray, gray, gray. Uh-oh. Green.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
What happened? 476 is?
The fall of Rome.
The fall of Rome. No more gray. Uh-oh. Who was it, Henry?
Barbarian
European. Yes, the European barbarians. Mm-hmm. That's why there's no more gray. But luckily, the Greeks and the Romans did as much as they did over this span of time. That's all the time they had. But boy, did they do a lot. And thus, the green became very different because of that. The barbarians spent most of their time wondering about the Greeks and the Romans and how to try to do as well as they had done. And luckily, that led to the Renaissance. Okay, good. All right, I'm glad that we did more kind of an overall picture here, because I tell you what, that is always the hardest part of history. Listening to the stories of, you know, a Persian emperor and his battles and this and that. Yeah, it's fine. It's good. But the most important thing about history is figuring out how to connect it and make sense of it overall. And here we are because of it, right? Here we are. You are here. Why? Because of all this. Nobody gets over here without this. This, 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 and this. We can pretty much do without this, but, you know, all of this stuff over here, we gotta have it. Otherwise, we never get here. It's amazing, but it's true. All right. Good luck with your test prep. This is your sheet, of course. Two more days to go, so good luck with that. I look forward to your answers on Thursday. I'll help you hone them and make them the best that they can be. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.